All right, hey guys, welcome back to the studio. Today we have Brandi Ritter, pro natural figure, five-time Ironman finisher, Team USA, World Sweden. Welcome to the studio, Brandi.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am and how appreciative I am that you invited me on to, you know, just share some of my story.
Yeah, you've got a great story. I'm looking forward to chatting with you. We've already had a great conversation off camera, and we just rolled for about 3 hours, and I can't wait to share your story with the audience.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. And looking forward to giving you just a little bit of how I came into, you know, the bodybuilding and the Ironman and all the other things that have just been really an exceptional life. I don't know where I should start.
Yeah. Well, I think what led you down the path, like five-time Ironman champion, but you were, there was a sixth in that mix too. So there's a story there, I'm sure.
Yeah. So that sixth one wasn't necessarily sixth in the structure of it. It was my second Ironman, and it was in St. George, Utah. And at that one, I was really convinced. I was starting to get fast. I really had my, you know, training dialed in. And I was convinced that I was going to qualify to go to Worlds in Hawaii. I knew it was going to be tough. I, you know, St. George, Utah, there's hills and you know, so the biking and the running was going to be tough. But swimming's always been my strong suit.
Wow.
And never once did I consider that the swim would become a problem for me. That was like the least of my worries. So we traveled out to Utah and got off the plane. And I mean, it's still snowing on the mountains. And, you know, getting a little bit concerned about how cold the water was going to be. And we get down to St. George, which is like Zion National Park, just absolutely beautiful. The water is freezing cold. Absolutely just like take your breath away, stop your heart cold. And they had said that the water was 59 degrees. And, you know, I've jumped in the lake where my grandma lives, and that water was taking my breath away. I was thinking it was a lot colder.
Yeah.
But yeah, so race day came. And, you know, our wetsuits that we have, when wetsuits are put on, there's this massive strap of Velcro in the back, like they won't come undone. You zip them up. And got in the water and started swimming. And probably about half a mile in, I knew I was maybe having some trouble. You know, my hands were starting to get a little bit numb. And
and
I was really starting to pay attention to where the safety people were on their paddle boards and stuff. A few minutes after that, somehow, and I look at it now, I think it's the hand of God, my wetsuit came open. So like any kind of body heat that I had inside the wetsuit, when it came open, all that cold water rushed in. And I think that really sealed the deal. I think the hand of God was all like, all right, you need to get out of the water now. But I kept swimming because I'm pretty hard-headed and driven, and I had a plan. And, you know, I started sighting like every 7 strokes, I would look and see where they are. And anybody who knows anything about hypothermia, you really start having some wacky thoughts. You know, your thinking becomes not straight. And I think finally my thought that still sticks with me to this day, I was like, okay, either ask for help or they might find your body.
Right.
And at that point I was all like, that's not a choice. And so I like waved for help, and they came over, and they're like, hey, you can hold on the board. You can't make forward progress. And I was like, nope, I have hypothermia. And the minute I said it, my body shut down. They had to get in the water to get me out. They had to put me on the jet ski in front of them because I couldn't hold on to anything. And I probably should have been taken to the hospital. I couldn't talk for like a half an hour. I couldn't stop doing like the shaking or whatever. And so some of my friends who are EMS said that I probably should have, you know, been taken and had warm fluids, whatever. But it was sobering.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
But still, you have five, you know, world champion Team USA, world Sweden.
Yeah. And well, the cool thing about that, so pretty lucky. My brother was there at that race, you know, and I was really, really upset that I hadn't finished it. And my brother is an accomplished mountain climber, kayaker. And he was like, you know what? The best athletes know when to live to fight another day.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, all right.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
I came home to Detroit.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah. And, you know, to get your head on straight and a big thing like that, I came home to Detroit. And the next weekend, I signed up for a local race and did it just because I didn't want that swim to get in my head.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, so it was adversity. But, you know, what do you do when, you know, you get knocked down?
I think that was the way to go. Obviously, like you said, hand to God, there was a, you know, someone watching.
There was a purpose. And I just couldn't like finish every single up until that point. I probably had about 100 races under my belt. I had never not finished a race.
Well, you were a seasoned swimmer, so this is why it speaks to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For me, like, to be knocked out, it was like, you know, that double blow.
Exactly.
So I was all like, oh, what the hell just happened?
It was a serious deal. You knew it.
Yeah.
Because you were so seasoned. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. So, well, what took you down the path, really, like into your fitness journey, you know, because it just doesn't, you don't just jump in and win, five-time Ironman. You started somewhere.
Well, you know, I got really lucky. My parents always really modeled like this health and fitness lifestyle. We grew up in Northern Michigan. We were outdoor people. My dad had been in the Air Force, and they actually built a gym in Alpena, which is, you know, way up near the tip of the top of Michigan. And in that gym, we actually sort of got lucky. There's an Air Force base in Oscoda, probably like half an hour away. One summer, the Blue Angels were stationed at the Oscoda Air Force Base. And where'd they come to train? My parents' gym. So here I am, I'm like 12 or 13 years old, and I'm literally seeing Top Gun walk in front of me.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, I think you start having ideas of excellence, and then you see excellence.
Yeah. Interesting tie in here. My folks have a summer house on the Air Force Base.
Oh, it works
currently. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
That's very, very cool. Yeah. That's that was my first half Ironman that they had a race up in Oscoda, and a part of the run was on the Air Force Base.
So, cool.
Yeah. Like the roots up there are strong. That's where my massive family is from, both my mom and dad's side. So yeah, lots of fun times up there.
Yeah. So you were raised with discipline, and that was role modeled for you. Yeah. And so what was your journey into getting into bodybuilding? Like, you started out at the gym and then...
Yeah, well, so my dad was a natural bodybuilder his whole life. When he was in the Air Force, he was like, no matter where I was, he's like, if there wasn't a mission, you know, if I was in the Philippines or Japan or whatever, he's like, there's always a gym. He's like, and I go and I work out, and then I go to the mess hall and eat and take a nap, and then I go work out again and eat again. And so, you know, he did that. And I mean, my dad, he just looked good, and he loved it. He was passionate about it. And I actually brought a picture in with me, too, of my great grandma when she's like 3 and she's holding a set of weights. When I say it's a family legacy, it really is.
It isn't interesting, too. Fitness is universal. Like you just said, wherever he was, there was a gym and he could work out. Yeah.
And it was cool. And we lived in Florida for a while. We lived there. He would work out in the driveway. You know, he worked in construction. They would work all day long, and he'd come home and he'd have like the sawhorse benches, and he would work out in the driveway or whatever. And I watched them do that. And then him and my uncle would run a couple days every week, like 10 miles or something. And so I'd ride my bike with them, and, you know, just sort of grew up always just sort of like watching that and enjoying, you know, being, you know, physical with my body.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a certain satisfaction that you get when you're, you know, feeling like you're in your skin and using your body for the purpose that it's meant.
Releasing those endorphins. And
for sure.
It's mental fitness as much as it is physical fitness.
I tell people all the time that I, you know, a lot of the reason why I'm in the gym the way that I am, it's, you know, I suffer from anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
And I, you know, for me, it's medication to be in there. So, you know, it's really helps me burn off a lot of that.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
And quiet the noise and focus on, your purpose and your passion. I love that.
Yeah. And I walk out, and I'm, you know, no matter what kind of day I'm having, I walk out of the gym, I'm whistling, skipping, everything is much better.
Yeah. Everything's better after a workout. It just is. If it's just a walk, you know?
Seriously. Yeah. Well, the last few days it finally snowed here in Michigan, and got my snowshoes out finally. And Monday at work, we have like a little bit of like a wooded area around work, and I threw my snowshoes in the car, and on my lunch break, I went out and
that's awesome.
You know, went out for an hour, because I think people forget to connect with nature. So inside on their phones, and life is happening outside of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you can squeeze in a 20-minute walk on your lunch break, you know what I mean? Do it. Yeah.
It changes the lens right away.
Absolutely. Well, you've had some pretty amazing mentors along the journey. Well, who was your most influential mentor leading into your fitness journey?
Well, first and foremost, I'll always say my dad.
Yeah.
I mean, he trained with me for all these races. Like my first when I first thought I could do a full distance Ironman, you know, it was before you could just go on the internet and say, okay, I want to do this or whatever, type it in and you could get a answer spit out. So my dad was all like, well, I don't know, let's go try. And we went and we ran 18 miles at Stony Creek. We're all like, okay, we think, you know, and so it sort of started there. But, you know, you find that you get people in your path that are supposed to be there. A friend from a triathlon club, she's like, hey, you know, I know someone who is looking for a trainer. I've been certified as a personal trainer since 2004, so over 20 years. And I started working with her, and her husband was a pro basketball player. And she was like, hey, you know, if you really want to get into these shows or whatever, you know, we know this guy who helped my husband get ready for the NBA, and, you know, he's wonderful and whatever. And so they introduced me to John Simmons, who is an IFBB pro. And I started working with him, and I, you know, just one of the most stable individuals, you know, gentle, even though he looks like, you know, if you didn't know him, you saw him on the street, you'd be like, oh my gosh, it's just like the biggest heart, you know, the best guy. And, you know, I was really going through a lot of stuff in my life at that point. And, you know, he would watch me cry for an hour while he's training me, just beating me up too. And he liked it because he was all like, man, you had the endurance. I've never seen anything. He'd have me do like 50 reps or something. He would just beat me up. And I think he enjoyed beating me up.
Yeah.
And it was just really good.
Well, you knew you could take it too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was cathartic.
Yeah.
To be able to sit there and, you know, just literally like, you know, spit out that nasty crap and then, you know, walk out with a clean slate for however long it was going to last.
Yeah.
And so,
well, you have the endurance and the mental toughness, and he knew that and he believed in you, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't just torturing you for fun, but like he enjoyed to push you because he knew that you had the endurance to take it.
Yeah. And yeah. I think a lot, you know, you and I have mentioned the iron sharpens iron a couple of times. And I think he, you know, you sort of get the impression when you're working with people, you know, that you're working with your people.
You know who is meant to be on your path when you meet them. And that's just the way that it lines up. And I think that's really special when that happens, especially when it's a mentor that's made such an impact in your life and you take that with you for the rest.
Absolutely.
The journey.
And, you know, just one of my dearest friends. And, you know, it's a relatively small industry, but when you're in it, you know, you start seeing the same people all the time and whatever, and you become close with everyone because they understand your weird lifestyle and food and all that. You know, no, I can't go out on Friday night because I got to go to bed because I got to, you know, you bring your food with you to the restaurants or whatever. But, you know, I've been competing in the bodybuilding shows probably for a little over 10 years now. And I really started chasing. I wanted to get my pro card, and I'm a natural bodybuilder. I don't take any kind of steroids, no fat burners, no anything. Anything that's on the WADA banned substance list, I just won't do it.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a nod to my dad, but also I have two daughters, you know, and I enjoy showing them that, you know, you can be excellent. Sometimes it's a little bit harder to achieve that. But if you put the work in, you know, the results are there.
Absolutely.
And
totally respectable.
Yeah. And so the last couple of years, I started getting really close, you know, super, super close. And finally, in 2023, I sort of hit my sweet spot. You know, I had met somebody who was in the same, you know, the same mentality as me. And we really just like vibed. And like that was like, you know, that moment, you feel it.
Yep.
It's your moment. And I ended up doing really, really well at Masters Nationals and the IFBB circuit. And then I had a show in the natural circuit and I got my pro card.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. It was something I really wanted. Both of my parents have stage 4 cancer. They're both outliers because, you know, you can talk about what's your inspiration. I mean, they've been alive longer than they ever should have been.
Yeah. It's,
and I truly do.
While experiencing cancer.
Yeah. And you wouldn't even pick them out of the crowd as the sick ones either. That's
right.
The crazy part. You're like, oh, well, he's 82 and she's 74.
Wow.
You know, I mean, like, seriously, I'll be like, Mom, sit down. You're exhausting me. You know, and she's just like,
and this is a testament to their lifestyle.
Yes. I mean, you know, they're still like crushing it. They're all like, no, we have, you know, we have all this stuff to do and they're still out there living it.
Wow.
You know?
That's amazing.
And so this is what this lifestyle gets you.
Yeah. And then are they, you know, clean eating?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to the extent, you know, they're older now. My mom always was like more like, you know, she likes the candy and whatever.
Sure.
But, you know, I remember being a little kid and there were five of us. So like two relatively young parents and we had our bedtimes or whatever. So candy, we would get to go on Friday night and we could pick a candy on Friday night. And that was it. We didn't get candy the rest of the week. So sort of like as a byproduct, like now as adults, generally you can open up our, you know, purse or backpacks and there's probably a box of, you know, whatever.
Something in there.
But, you know, I can see now as an adult, like they don't want five kids hyped up on sugar all the freaking time, you know.
Right.
So Friday night was late night up and go pick one candy bar. It was so exciting.
Kind of the same for us too. We didn't really have a free for all with candy growing up. It was just me and my two brothers. It wasn't five of us, but we were definitely pretty. My folks were pretty good with us about keeping that out of our hands.
Yeah, you're like bouncing off the wall, five kids.
Exactly. Plus the dentist bills alone.
But my mom always made it look easy. I'm like, to this day, I'm like, how on God's earth did she make it look so easy? And like, we had a magical childhood.
I love that. We got talking yesterday when you came to the studio, and I could relate to that because, you know, much like your mom, my mom made it look very easy too. And my mom worked a full-time job, you know, while she raised us and as my dad was working too. But she made being a wife and a mother look so easy. I don't know how she did it. We were a handful. We were not.
Yeah.
Like, we had our manners and all that about us, but because our folks disciplined us, you know, on a regular basis and when we were out of line and things like that. And as you know, as a kid, you're not just born with all the know-how, you know what I mean? How to act and all those things. It comes with age. But we were kind of a handful and she did very well, you know, as a mother. And I can appreciate that about your mom. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. To this day. Well, and I sort of got lucky. My mom's a twin. And so the twins married brothers. And so, you know, my aunt and uncle had three kids. There were five of us. So there are eight of us. And so genetically, we're brothers and sisters. And a lot of times we were raised in the same house or pretty much as brothers and sisters. And we had two moms. And when everything was great, it was awesome. But when both of them were mad at you at the same time, it was like the wrath of God coming at you. And like, they were 5'3", but they're like, you know, Irish, you know, it's like, you want to like see someone get mad, tell Irish woman to calm down.
So were they identical twins?
Identical.
Wow. So. So cool.
Yeah. And, you know, people could not tell them apart. Us kids could tell them apart. However, I will say I see pictures of them as younger, and I can't quite tell them apart, but totally identical. And people be like, who's who?
That's so cool. Yeah. And I know as we talked off camera too, you're a mother, you have daughters and you spoke to their journey kind of into the things that they're into now. And I know wrestling is one of them.
Yeah. So my younger daughter, Ashley, last year joined the Utica High School wrestling team. She was the only girl on the team last year. There had been girls on the team prior, but, you know, I think the boys, when the girls first joined, it's always sort of like, oh, what's this girl here to do? And then they got a load of her work ethic and she like really integrated into that team really, really well. And one of the things, I mean, beyond, there's so many things I love about wrestling because that work ethic is there. These kids are working out 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, generally two tournaments a week. I'm like, and a lot of them are scholar athletes. They're like intelligent and they do their homework and they're just like really impressive kids. And to watch my daughter do the sport and she's getting good at it. She'll, you know, they wrestle the boys too, which iron sharpens iron.
Iron sharpens iron.
I'm like, you're going to get better. And, you know, and it's fun for me because I'm the mom there, you know, that's not my sport.
Right.
So I just get to go there and like, you know, wrestling moms, I get to support her, you know, for all those years that they watched me, you know, hang out at races, you know, while mom's on the course for whatever. Now I'm there doing that for her. And it's really awesome.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Jiu-jitsu is similar. There's a lot of kids that from the wrestling arena that find their way into jiu-jitsu. And it's a great balance of both. And, you know, there's a lot of, I know a lot of young ladies finding their way into both jiu-jitsu and wrestling. So that's very cool. And what a great role model your daughters have, you know, with you as a mother.
Well, and my sisters too. So, sisters and brothers, all of us, all eight of us are elite or pro athletes in our respective sports of choice.
Wow.
Which is really cool. But my one sister, Shaney, she just got her black belt in jiu-jitsu.
So
the
cool.
The gym that she, Yes, it's beyond cool. Like my, you know, I'm the oldest sister. So like she's my little sister.
Yes.
So proud of her to watch that journey, you know, and, you know, she's in a gym where
it's hard work.
It's hard work. She's there all the time, you know, and she takes it seriously. And I say wrestling, jiu-jitsu, it's a thinking man sport.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really, you know, think it through and know what you're doing and those moves. And, you know, my daughter will walk off the mat and it goes by in the blink of an eye and she'll be like, Mom, this, and she can repeat it like it's like a slow motion film and it blows my mind.
It's a mind, body, soul experience.
It really,
yeah. Very impressive with the black belt. That's no joke. And it's a lot of work.
The school or the facility, the 303 in Denver is where she trains out of. And so Tony is her coach and they talk about lineage, I guess, in jiu-jitsu. And so Tony was trained by the Gracie brothers. And so it's like your
lineage. That's why I train Gracie.
Yeah. And so my sister actually went and got certified too in women's self-defense by one of the daughters of the Gracies. So
very cool.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just we've been exposed to like all of these athletes that are just of the highest caliber. And you find that those pro athletes are humble and kind and want to share.
The most humble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I told you our life feels like a little bit like Forrest Gump. Like when you start talking about all these people that you've met and things that, you know, you've been able to do with your life, it's been an incredible journey. And some people are like, that's not real because of much of it.
Yeah.
And,
you faced some adversity too. I mean, just the journey of you're originally from Michigan, but you've moved around a little bit. Mm-hmm. Share a little bit about your journey and, you know.
Well, yeah, I think, we moved a lot, you know, and so my dad was in construction. And so if the construction industry was flat somewhere, we would move elsewhere. And so we moved all over the place. And so, you know, in a couple ways, you know, it really gave us some strengths, but there were other things too, because it was a constant, you know, moving kind of situation, a constant new school. And we wouldn't always take all of our stuff with us. And
right.
So there were all these components of like, all right, now you got to walk into a new school and be brave. But on the flip side, you know, there'd always be someone, you know, the girls were like relentless bullies and stuff. And so, you know, some of those triggers that get installed or whatever, because it happened so much. I think by the time I graduated high school, I'd been in 7 high schools.
Wow.
Like a lot.
Yeah. And it's a lot of transition.
A lot of transition. So you get really comfortable with not being comfortable.
Yeah.
But there are also some really like weird, like adaptation or coping mechanisms that get installed too. Yeah. I think you probably see it now. Most in my life, I've been in the house I'm in now for a long time because I wanted my daughters to have that experience of
stability,
preschool to high school, and know what it was to, you know, just have like those lifelong friends. And, you know, because for me, it was always transitional with friends. I had my best friend who I knew from the time I was in third grade up in Alpena. We started moving probably in 6th grade, but I stayed best friends with her. And she got killed in an accident just about 15 years ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And so, you know, you felt like with all the moving, some of your life had been erased. I mean, she knew my story, right?
Yeah, right.
She knew that part of my story. You know, you have your brothers and sisters and parents, and they know you in a certain way. But I think the people that you choose to surround yourself with know you in a way that maybe other people will never know.
Yeah, I can relate. I lost a close friend. I think we shared that yesterday while we were chatting. I had lost a friend of mine. Same time frame too, you know, that I grew up with. We went to high school together, and then it was later in life, and you know, not so long ago. And yeah, I can relate to that. It's hard, and then it comes in waves, and then you kind of have to start. I don't feel like I've ever gotten used to it. It's like you kind of become at points numb to that happening, you know, losing people and kind of just carrying on their memory. But yeah, it never gets any easier, you know, but part of that life transition, it's tough.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, so I think beyond just missing her, I sort of made a promise that I would live life for her too.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Carry on her memory. And
yeah, like
you're doing it so beautifully.
She's there, yeah. You know, and you don't have any time to waste. I think yesterday when we were talking, I briefly brought up when I was 25 years old, I was living in California. My mom was out visiting. Her best friend was dying of a brain tumor. And we were out for a walk. And that was back before there were cell phones. And we got a page. that my brother had been in a snowboarding accident. And so this was like the advent of snowboarding, you know, snowboarders weren't allowed on ski hills or whatever, but he had hit a tree at the equivalent of 50 miles an hour, which generally is 99% of people die upon impact. And so they're like, hey, come on out, let's talk about organ donation. So we had to get on a plane and got out there. And the first time I ever saw my dad cry.
Yeah.
We got off the plane and he was in surgery. Originally, they thought he had hit his head. So, you know, I agonized on the plane about him, my brother, not being my brother anymore. You know, that essence of who you are, you know, if you have a traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
And the pilots were incredible. We were on a commercial flight, but the pilots were able to get communication from the hospital that he was at. So they would give us updates while we were flying.
Amazing.
I mean, seriously.
Wow.
How cool is that?
Yeah, very
cool. You know, they just know, like, you're getting off a plane to, like, go and talk about organ donation, right?
Yeah.
And when we got there, the doctors were all like, hey, it wasn't his head. He actually, like, you know, because he skateboarded his whole life, took the impact sideways, but he blew out his aorta. So they're all like, you know, we have him in surgery now and, you know, we've had to stop the blood flow to his lower body. So he's probably going to be paralyzed from the waist down.
Wow.
So, but you go from like, okay, he was going to die to like, you know, we'll take him. Yeah. It's just like,
whatever. It's a lot to take in and process. Yeah.
It was a lot. And, you know, he's 19 and whatever, resilient. But I remember they brought him out of that recovery room and God, his nurse was just a bitch. She was just like a bitch on wheels, but she and I just did not like each other right off the rip. You find those people sometimes you don't even know why, but her and I were both, and you know, looking back now, she's got her job to do, but I was sitting in the room and he was coming out of the anesthesia and I saw his toes move.
Amazing. That feeling. Oh my goodness.
Absolutely incredible. I mean, I think he was part of like medical conferences for a while.
Yeah. How did the recovery evolve?
So they put a plastic aorta in. Yeah. So the plastic went in. I think he flew home to Michigan like a week later.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, being a dumb kid, I think he had another accident a few weeks later where he broke something. I'm like, you're going to give mom and dad a heart attack.
But he wasn't paralyzed.
He was not paralyzed. His whole life since then, he's had like some residual like nerve damage that he'll complain about. And, but that's it. I mean, like how he walked away from that.
That's fucking amazing.
With like,
that's so good.
I mean, seriously, like, he shouldn't have lived. And we briefly talked to on, you know, he doesn't talk about it with everybody, but he was dead. He's talked about it to me a little bit. And some people say, hey, it's just like this, you know, activity in your brain and everything's shutting down, all these electrical impulses. But he was all like, Brady, you know, he's like, I know what's there now. He's like, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
He's like, but I knew mom and dad weren't done.
That movie that I referenced to you earlier today, Miracles from Heaven, it came to me at this interesting time. You'll have to check that out. And you had a recommendation for me, too.
Yeah, I do.
What is that?
Oh, there's just this incredible movie called Captain Fantastic.
Okay.
Viggo Mortensen. And it's just beautiful. But that's a reference to how my parents raised
us. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Where the characters in the movie were talking about, you know, they moved out into the middle of nowhere with their kids and they, you know, raised them to like, you know, read and know the world and be physical with their bodies. You know, they hunted, they ran, they trained, they did all these things. And they said they were raised in warrior poets.
Well, I love that because it ties right into your brother's story.
Yeah.
That's a perfect tie-in right there. Wow. Wow. What is your brother's name?
John.
John. Wow. Amazing. It's an amazing recovery. You said he made it into some medical journals.
He was the topic of a lot of medical conferences for a while.
Wow.
And I mean, and he's got one hell of a gnarly scar too. It wraps pretty much like, it starts under here because of where he took the impact.
Yeah.
Instead of cracking him down his chest like this, they actually like cut him like this to put the aorta in. So I sort of always visualize like his body was cracked open.
Yeah.
The can this way.
Yeah.
And he has a scar. It goes from here all the way back and up under the scapula. And it's like a keloid scar. So it's pretty thick.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I guess
chicks
dig scars. Yeah. He's got six kids.
Now, how old is John today?
I think just turned 48.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So he's like my age.
Yeah. And six kids and just really an incredible human being too.
So cool.
Yeah. I really I really enjoy all my brothers and sisters. Like, we're just so lucky to have the bonds that we do and just be surrounded by the people we do. I guess I always feel sorry for other people that they're not going to have that same kind of wild and amazing experience that we had.
Yeah.
And still are having.
Yes. That's so cool. It's so unique. Everyone's got a different upbringing and, you know, everyone sees things differently. And we talked a little bit about that yesterday too, is that everyone has a different perspective. And, you know, even when you're raised in the same family, not everybody has the same experience. And it's just interesting as we become more seasoned in life and we reflect back how it all unfolds. It's so fun to like just reflect and look back.
Yeah. Man, we had looked back and we lived really, when I say we lived hard, we played hard. Yeah. And we fought hard, like when we fought, and we sort of started mellowing out of like that fighting stuff or whatever, but we were always hard chargers, you know, and never afraid to like speak our minds. But we, you know, we had every experience. And I remember my mom a couple years ago saying, she's like, every time you kids came up with some new idea, someplace you're going to go, something you're going to do, she's like, my heart would always sort of like clench a little bit. She's like, but I would never tell you no.
Yeah.
I just tell you come back safe.
Right. That's awesome. So what was it like, I have to ask, while you're training for the Ironman, like getting into the competitions and stuff like that, what is that process? I have some friends in that industry and they've competed and done different things, and I've shared that with you. But just for the audience, like from your perspective, what were, you know, some of the highlights and lowlights, like adversity and kind of getting into that competitive arena, like as far as that goes?
So for triathlon or for bodybuilding?
Both, like really, like.
Okay. Because I did triathlons for a really long time. I did my first triathlon in 1999, and that was back when like there weren't a lot of races. I mean, today you can find a race on any given weekend with probably within a 30 mile radius, but back then my very first race that I ever did was up at Stony Creek Metro Park, which is local here, but there were the best racers in the world that came there. I think Chris McCormick and Sheila Tarmina, there was a whole list. If I look at, they were all like world-class pro athletes, and they were there because that was one of the qualifying races. I think for me, some of the big things that I did, because my kids, you know, River, my older daughter, River, was the only daughter I had her. And so I'd always take a look at this time that I'm training as time away from them. And for whatever reason, or maybe not whatever reason, it ties back to my brother and dying. So I was 25 years old. And I realized, like, instead of that, you know, everyone at 25, you think you're immortal, you're never going to die. You have all this time to do anything you want. And at 25, I realized this could be over tomorrow.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're all like, all right, let's get busy.
Yeah.
And so, but I was also hyper aware of that time away from my kids. You know, it's like, and so for me, it just really started morphing into my training happening really, really early in the morning. I just decided that I was going to sacrifice some of my sleep so my kids would never know that I was really not there.
Right.
You know, but I was lucky because I loved it. You know what I mean? I gloried in, you know, experiencing the joy of using my body and going out for those runs and then meeting the incredible people that you'd meet, and you're running hundreds, if not thousands of miles with some of your core people. And, you know, you hear their stories and stuff, and you always hear something that just inspires you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, something that the first race, I do remember there was a relay team, and I think one of the people was paralyzed from the waist down, and each of the others was a single leg amputee. And I was like, why the fuck do I think this is so hard?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, it's all of a sudden you're all like, you know, it's
perspective, like, right? Yeah. 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 I work with folks for many, many years with different abilities, and I'm just blown away by the resilience and the discipline and the determination, the self-determination. Some of the folks that I've had the pleasure of knowing that get around on wheels, that are in wheelchairs, and they're working out and they're doing pull-ups, and you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, find a way to make it happen.
It's, yes.
You know, it's like, I think each person, you're your own limiter. You know what I mean? It's like you can only go as far as you think you're going to go.
Yeah. And you're limitless.
If you think you don't have limits or whatever, I mean, sometimes it's like you get a little bit, you know, you get in that motion where you keep going and whatever, and you don't have limits. And it's like, you just decide, I'm not going to shut myself down. I'm going for it.
You're your own
limit. Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really do enjoy being in the gym. That's probably my sport. You know, I've been injured swimming with my hypothermia. You know, I've crashed my bike where I thought I broke stuff or whatever. A few years ago, I slipped on some black ice out in the middle of winter with my running group. And I still remember to this, luckily my hip hit first, but I still remember my head bouncing off the pavement. Ooh. And like getting like just such a horrible concussion. And so like at the gym, I'm like, I just don't get hurt like that. You know what I mean?
It's right.
Like, I'm always warm. You know, it's just like, and so, you know, every time I'm in the gym, you know, I was usually glad when the run was over, swim was over, bike was over. And in the gym, I always wish I had 5 more minutes.
Right. You
know?
Yeah.
And so like that's, you know, sometimes the key, you know.
Well, your pictures are amazing. Your physique is just wow. And, you know, what comes with the discipline of eating, like with those competitions like that, training for that? I know eating's a big part of it. Walk me through that.
I would even say eating, you know, is the difference, because it does take a lot of discipline. It really does. And you see the same people in the gym all the time. Everyone's working just as hard.
Yeah.
And so what's the difference? And it's the food. And a lot of people will want to do a show. It takes a lot of discipline. But, you know, Ironman, you train for 20 weeks and you have all these things too. So you sort of start building that discipline. And the food, for me, I always found I just sort of tried to flip this switch. You know what I mean? It's like, so for me, doing a show was more like a ego project. You know what I mean? I'm choosing to do something.
Yeah.
No one's got a gun to my head.
Right.
I don't, you know, it's like if I really, really, really got hungry, I can go and get something out of the fridge. So none of that bullshit about being hangry or any of that other stuff. That's just like, you know, or being mean to the people that are surrounding me or whatever. It's my, I'm doing something by choice.
And just
because you look pretty at the end of it or whatever doesn't give you a license to be, in, you know, cruel to the people around you.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. And so I was always just sort of very aware that, you know, I wanted to do this. I was enjoying doing this. And in order to do this properly, this is how I needed to eat. This is how I needed to do it. And honestly, it's like not eating the way that I was supposed to means I just wasted like how much money, how much effort, how much, you know, it's like I have other people. I always told my coach, John, that, you know, we're a team. You know, I might be up on there on the stage, but my teammates are there and I'm not used to letting my teammates down.
Right.
I won't do it. You know,
that.
No man left behind. And seriously, like if he believes in me, it's like I'm going to give him a reason to believe in me. And so you just sort of get that switch, you know, where it's like you're fueling your body. This is what you're eating. And then you just go off and do something else, you know?
Isn't it interesting, too? Because I know we talked a little bit off camera about that. You flip that switch and it's like, you know, the difference when you once you've started eating clean and changed your diet from processed foods that, well, you kind of had a leg up on, you know, having parents that really didn't pump you full of all that stuff. But like I did have parents that did the processed food gig. And I mean, I think it was kind of a balance because my mom liked fresh veggies, too.
Right.
It was my dad that was more, he was raised with processed food and canned foods and things like that. But my mom was not. So she would have that stuff for him because that's what he preferred. But we had a good balance. And so, so I had a pretty good mindset on eating as I was growing up. But as I became an adult and was making those life choices for myself, I always went the more organic route and more of the fresh route of things. And so, and I've always liked, you know, chicken, steak, fish, seafood, all those things. Loved spinach as a kid, always did. And so loved my greens. And, you know, those were choices that I made. But when I was making, you know, dubious life choices, you know, drinking, carrying on and on the party circuit, you know, I was eating processed foods, fast food, Taco Bell, you know, name it. And I was in that drive through and your mind changes when you eat that stuff. Luckily I've always had kind of a, fast metabolism and things like that. So really the only thing that distorted my body was drinking. But as far as food went, it was all mind, all in my mind. It was like I was foggy. I didn't feel good. I wasn't focused. But then like I started making those changes, like I mentioned to you, I started juicing vegetables and greens. And then I was back into like a regular workout regimen. And then it was like, there's no turning back because you know how shitty you feel when you eat that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, that mindset, that's got to be, you know, the driving force behind building your physique.
Yeah, just knowing, I say it a lot. I'm like, I wish everyone could feel how I felt.
You know? I loved it when you said that yesterday.
A lot of people don't realize how they actually feel, because like they just feel normal because they eat the way that they eat all the time. Yep. So that's the norm. But once you do eat clean for a certain amount of time and you introduce something else, all of a sudden, I mean, it's really massive. It's a massive difference. Your body has zero idea what to do with
it. It's like magic. Yeah. Because I remember like the very first thing I did, I remember you're coming up as a kid and you're drinking soda, you're drinking pop, you know?
We never drank it as a kid.
That's amazing.
Like seriously, it just wasn't in the house.
That's perfect. Yeah. So like, I don't have it in the house. Like as an adult, and even as I got into my 20s, I didn't even understand, like when I look back, I left pop and soda behind so long ago that I don't ever know why I ever drank it in the first place. And I think it was just because it was presented to me and mm-hmm. that's what you did. You know what I mean? It was there and everybody drank it. Like you go over to your friend's house, it's, you know, in the fridge.
Yeah, and it was a big deal too.
Yeah.
I like a soda, you're like, oh.
Right. You know, exactly.
Like, oh, I mean, that's what I do.
But as an adult, like I remember leaving that behind and it was no skin off my nose because it only made me more thirsty when I drank that. And it was so much sugar. And again, like the brain fog that comes with that. And it's just empty calories and syrup. And I find the most refreshing thing.
Absolutely.
Or iced tea, like unsweetened iced tea.
All the fresh tea. You put like black tea or anything, and you know, a little bit of lemon in there.
Yeah,
it's party
so clean and your brain's fresh and goodness.
That's the thing. It's like being, you know, I'm 54. I honestly think, you know, I mean, I'm lucky I got some great genes from my parents and stuff, but you know, the nutrition and the supplements that I take, you know, my dad and I worked so hard, you know, for years and years for, you know, with what to take, you know, when I'm racing and everything, and it's benefited me. I certainly, you know, do not feel my age. I'm like, I wish I could, you know, in my heart, I feel like maybe I'm 19.
I get it. I'm right with you.
And so, but you know, it's like this food, it really, you know, being in the gym and everything else and doing this the right way, it buys you these extra years of life.
Absolutely.
You know, like actually living, not just breathing.
And feeling good. There's a difference between living and breathing and feeling good, right? Can I ask, what are some of the supplements that you found most beneficial to you?
Oh,
personally.
So, I mean, from racing or whatever, I love nitric oxide. And so that's,
I take like nitric oxide.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, you know, I go out west. My sisters live in the mountains in Colorado and snowboard, and like they're at 10,000 feet. And if you're snowboarding or climbing a mountain, you're at 12 or 14. And I would get a little bit of altitude sickness. And when I really came across nitric oxide, because and I always preface it with like, hey, because everyone's all like, oh, what's that weird supplement? I'm like, they give it to NICU babies that are trying to develop their lungs. They were born too early because it allows additional O2 uptake. And so O2 is the name of the game, baby. In racing and lifting weights, whatever, if you can get that additional
right
oxygen. Yeah. If you get that additional oxygen to your muscles, you immediately have, you know, X amount more of endurance, X amount more of, you know, strength. And then I'm a big, big believer. I take a Super B, you know, the B vitamins for all, you know, your neural functions and then your, you know, mentality and everything. It helps with your emotions. Bs are super important and they're water soluble. So if you do drink alcohol, you know, I've never been, you know, drinker, none of my brothers and sisters, I mean, recreationally, whatever.
Right.
But if you drink alcohol, it washes all those B vitamins out. And you talk about like how people suffer from depression and alcohol adds to that.
Yeah, so, totally. So that's, like, I kind of found my way away from alcohol just trying to make myself feel better because it was working against me, not for me. It wasn't making me feel any
better. It doesn't solve anything, you know? No. So for me, it's just, you know, that was just like when you're going and having some fun and being stupid.
Yeah, for sure.
Know? And me and my brother will do like some hikes, nighttime hikes,
right,
or whatever, like on trails and the summer times or whatever. And every time we come up to a trail marker, we'll do a shot of tequila or something. It's just
so
fun.
You drink when spirits are high, not to escape, and not when spirits are low.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I mean, like, I get it. I totally get that. Some people, like when tragedy strikes, they kick up their heels and wrap their lips around a bottle, and that's how they solve their problems. And different strokes for different folks. And, you know, I found my way out of that. You know, it's just focus on, I like to, if I'm feeling anxious, like you said, or I'm feeling low, you have your highs and your lows, there's ebbs and flows, and I find the gym is my outlet.
And go beat up some weights.
Absolutely.
Go for a, you know, a bike ride. And I know my bike rides are probably different from what people are thinking, because, you know, Ironman has 112 mile portion on the bike, you know.
Yeah.
And but you go out there and you just you do that and you just sort of like breathe it out and come back, and then you can be the person that you need to be around your family and the people that you love. You know,
absolutely.
I see a lot of times people will go and be super nice to their coworkers, super nice to the person in line at the grocery store. Oh, thank you. And then they go home and be shitty to your family. And I was like, man, like, you're never going to see that person in the grocery store again. Right. It's like the people that you really need to be kind to and give that extra bit of energy to are the people at home. So you try to like leave all that negative baggage and shit out, you know, out of the house or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you come in and you're, you know, really are present that way, you know, in a way that's beneficial and happy. And so for me, being in the gym like that, I was able to bring the best version of myself, you know, back into the house.
Yeah. Now, as far as like meals go, I know, like for me, I know what I like to eat, and we've already talked a little bit about that, but like for the audience, like for say a woman or anyone training, really, what were your go-to meals when you were training or just eating healthy, if they go hand in hand?
Well, it's really simple. And it is really simple. Everybody always wants this quick fix.
Very
simple. There's like maybe 6 to 10 foods that if you just stick to those, you really can't lose. Cause first of all, you're not going to pig out on them because they get really boring really fast.
Totally.
But you're talking chicken,
yep,
fish, rice, sweet potatoes, broccoli, green vegetables, you know, asparagus. You can do some of those sort of interchangeably.
Yeah.
But those are your, you know, big ones. And you can...
That abs all day. Chicken, broccoli, and rice. Yeah. I would tell everyone, like, that's when my abs started to pop. Chicken, broccoli, rice.
Yeah.
And my go-to was, even for a single person, like, if you're just a party of one, like, the big box retailer,
uh-huh,
you know, a Costco or a Sam's Club, like, I would buy all my chicken, all my rice, and do all that, and just meal prep for the week. And it's boring, but I don't need a bunch of doctored up food. So,
right,
like, I'm not a big, what do you call them, condiments guy.
Okay.
So, like, With the exception of like salt, pepper,
yeah,
like olive oil, whatever, stuff like that. Like, I can do the bland diet. It's not a thing for me. So like, I'm cool with that and it works, but it truly, truly works.
Yeah. And I always say, like, you know, I can still put a bikini on at my,
yeah,
age, you know, and rock it. And I'm all like looking good in my bikini, tastes better than any bag of Doritos.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you're talking about tuna fish. The manufacturers have started packaging it in those little packs.
Yes.
It's like 15 grams of protein. So I just started buying those. You can take, you know, instead of having to try to open a damn can.
I know.
Those things are like the stuff.
It's gold. And then they have the little tuna steaks in those things too. Yeah, they're perfect. It was funny because I was sharing with you yesterday the story about how I used to buy the Costco sized cans of tuna.
Uh-huh.
You got like however many come in there, I don't know, 12, 18, whatever. And I would carry them around in my trunk and I would just eat out of the, you know, with the fork and eat it out of the
can. It's like, who cares? I'll be in my car doing that same thing.
Two people are doing it. Or maybe I was penny pinching and I couldn't, you know, cause I couldn't afford the tear off ones.
Yeah.
I was on a budget starting up a business.
Yeah. Well, and I feel that, but I honestly think, you know, when you take a look at what food really costs, you know, eating healthy, I think, is probably one of the least expensive options. You can go get a, you know, a 5-pound pack of chicken for, yes, what it costs for a McDonald's.
Absolutely. And I go organic. So
yeah,
like the chicken is that's a non-negotiable for me. It has to be the organic because I can't go back, like, since I've had the organic chicken. So I get the organic tenderloins. It just doesn't taste the same to me. So I can play around with meat a little bit and stuff like that, but not the chicken. And no, I agree. It's once you, and plus, if you just look at what you're purchasing versus why you think the food is so expensive, cut out a few things,
right,
you know, of your life. Like maybe it's alcohol, maybe it's movies, maybe, you know what I mean, maybe it's junk food.
Exactly.
And then, yeah,
and find the way to make it happen, because it's not just that immediate look amazing for the stage, right?
It's for
like it's for your brain and longevity.
Yes.
I mean, like, seriously, you know, to be able to, it's the reason my parents are still around. My dad was diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer 12 years ago.
12 years ago and still.
12 years ago. Yeah. My mom was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. It'll be 3 years. The prognosis for that is like 6 months.
And
it'll be 3 years. No, my mom did smoke.
She did smoke?
Yeah.
Okay.
She did. She didn't start till later in her life. Her twin sister smoked younger. And my mom, Akani, who was my second mom, died of you know, basically what was emphysema, you know? And so like, I see people smoking now and I just want to like go up and tell them, you know, nobody really wants to hear it, but I'm like, please put that cigarette down. When you see, you know, my mom's got tumors in her brain, you know, and it's just like, although she's a weirdo because she had chemotherapy, she wasn't going to tell us that, you know, that she had cancer. And I was like, well, what the hell were you going to, you know, say when your hair started falling out from chemotherapy? You know, she didn't want us upset. And, you know, she didn't lose her hair during chemotherapy. She was like the, I mean, like literally, like when I talk outliers, but they set themselves up for success.
Yeah.
You know, you know, they want to live.
Yeah.
They're involved in their treatment.
Well, the key word there and was longevity. You know what I mean? So like making the healthy choices for myself just became, I have the same kind of family genes, I feel like you do.
Mm-hmm.
So both my folks had like six brothers and sisters on both sides. And so, and then everybody had three kids. So I had a lot of cousins, mm-hmm. I have a lot of aunts, a lot of uncles, and we always got together and my parents were the hub.
Yep.
So we lived on the lake, had the big backyard, did ice hockey, did all the parties and all that stuff. And so, you know, just growing up, no one outside of my brother passing away. He passed away at just 28 years old. He'd be 53 today. No one's ever really passed away suddenly with the exception of old age. And that was like well into their 80s and 90s. I know that I have longevity in my genes and that makes me nervous. You know what I mean? Once I started getting into my mid 30s, I was like, shit, I better start making some life changes because I feel like I'm going to be one of those folks that live to be 85, 90. And I want to be like, why turn that age and be miserable when you can be
just waiting for the end instead of like still being able to, you know, my dad and mom will still go out to see my sisters in Colorado and they're all, you know, we're going for a hike, you know, you're just all like,
it's amazing. Well, I told you yesterday off camera, one of my very first jobs when I was 15 was working in a nursing home. I was a laundry guy, you know, and I had all that time to kill while the laundry would, you know, you're washing the kitchen folks' aprons or whatever and stuff. And I would go down and chat with the elderly folks in between. And it was like, I got to see a little bit of everybody as a kind of a preview, you know what I mean? Right. As a young teen. And I was like, shit, you know, if you do live to be, you know, of that age, it's like you want to be sharp as a tack. Because I met those people and I met both sides of it. It was like kind of seeing your future, you know, in that moment.
Yeah. Which path do you want to pick?
Exactly. And I was like, wow, some of them just had this longevity and their minds were just sharp as a tack. And, you know, you meet those people and it's just fascinating. And I think you have a choice, you know, if you really take your health and wellness into your own hands, you know, really look at that. If you have a say in the matter, you know, I would want to be living my best life versus waiting for the end.
Exactly. And I think a big part of that too, because everyone looks and it's like, oh, well, I've done this for X amount of time. It's never too late to make changes. Those changes are like,
it's never too late.
You get immediate results, like immediate results. And especially it almost is like you get bigger results if you've been further away from the path, because it's such a radical change that it's such a benefit, you know, and that and I think you get immediate payoff, you know, which is very cool.
That's even just switching from, say, people, I listen to people tell me all the time when they drop pop or soda, when they cut that out and they switch to water or what have you, health benefits that they reap are amazing right off the rip, you know, or even just folks that take up walking.
Yeah.
Just
a short walk. Well, you take a look at, you know, because I've been certified nutrition forever in the soda thing. So if a person drinks, to gain a pound, it's 3,000 calories, right? So if you drink a can of soda a day, that's 200 calories. But let's say you do two. So that's 400 times 7 days, 2,800. That's a pound a week, babe.
Wow, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like empty calories. You're getting like absolutely zero from other than this awesome insulin spike.
Right.
Right. Which is like making you predisposed to diabetes. Right. And it's so solid. And so when you take a look at all that and you backpedal, you're immediately taking, you know, a lot of crap out of your diet, extra calories and all these other things. Yeah, you're going to feel like amazing.
For sure. Yeah. Just it's like a brain cleanse.
It really is. Yeah. And it's just small tweaks. And one of the things I do talk, you know, with women, that, especially women, because we have some really wonky ideas on if we're being good when we ate and all this other stuff. But you know, people try to make these radical changes. So all of a sudden they're going to lose 30 pounds and they're going to eat clean. And they're like, incorporate one thing and really just become comfortable with it. And then the next one, it's so hard to stay. There's always someone that will stick with it. Yeah. You know, and we see them all the time and like, oh, my method, like if their method was absolutely perfect, then everybody would follow it and it'd be perfect. And no, it's like incorporating what's going to work for you. I happen to love the gym. I love it.
And
I love
it. Certified in nutrition?
So part of my certification for being a personal trainer is we have to take our continuing education credits.
Yeah.
And so like I've had like all sorts of certifications, you know, working with cancer patients, nutrition for endurance. So, you know, I really like some of the things that have really been focal points for me being able to train and compete both in endurance sports and bodybuilding. I would say nutrition is like the name of the game. And so when I'm getting those continuing education credits, I'm really chasing stuff that's going to benefit what I'm doing too.
Yeah.
You know, and
now are you taking on coaching clients at this point?
I do take on some. I work full time at a job that, you know, all things being equal, I keep joking with the HR guy at my company that they should make me chief inspiration officer and they haven't like done it yet.
I love that.
I'm like, damn it. I just want to, you know what I mean? Like that's, you know, this is what I love to do. I love, you know, I'm like such a big cheerleader for people. And you know, me and you, I think are both empaths, people like being around us and stuff. And I'm like, can I just do this? But I do take on those people that want it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just like, I've had people come in before a husband that wants his wife to look better and she fucking hates being there. And I feel for her, you know, basically you know, I get it. I get why you don't want to be there. But the people that really, you know, you can tell people that want it. I'm like, I'm your person. And going back to my daughter's wrestling. So there are two other girls on the wrestling team this year, and they've actually had me take them into the gym. And I love it. I'm like in there with them. And like, they want to know because they want to get better at what they're doing. And I'm like in my glory because, you know, it's
there's just, nothing better for a coach than someone that wants to.
It's like, what? And then I go out and I like cheering for these girls. And, you know, it's like they're like my little baby ducklings that I'm out there watching. And I'm just like so proud to like see them out there because I know they have that mentality, you know, and it's just like cool to be part of their journey too.
Now, where would someone seek you out to hire you as a coach if they were looking to do that?
So
you didn't cover that when we were talking.
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, I, you know, my Instagram profile, people like reach out there, like, you know, I'll leave business cards or whatever. And so, like I said, I don't actively seek it. I find somebody that's actively seeking me is probably going to be more,
that's where it's at,
more predisposed to like wanting it.
Perfect.
And, but yeah, I mean, I could do it all day, every day. I love it, you know, and it's like the cool thing about me, one of the cool things is because of my endurance background. I mean, I've been doing triathlons for 25 years now, competing in bodybuilding, competing for over 10 years, but always around it since, you know, my parents built that gym and seeing my dad is I can flip that switch. So it's like, what sport do you do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like right now in the gym, I'm actively practicing like a lot of like the different moves that I feel would complement wrestling. You know what I mean? Like all those like body shapes and whatever that they get into and whatever, just being able to, you know, and do some of the strength moves with that. So I've been, you know, I always sort of try to wrap my mind around what's going to complement that sport and what kind of activity in the weight room is going to support that additional idea. And I'm going to propose this right now, and I've said it to a couple of people, but I've always wanted to write a book called Where's Your 30 Seconds?
Yeah.
Okay. And so the 30-second idea, part of the endurance community, Keith and Kevin Hansen are business owners. They own Hansen's Running Shops, and they were runners in college. And they really wanted to bring back American distance running. So you'll see the Hansen's Running Shops. There's one down by my house in Utica, and there's one up, I think, in Lake Orion and stuff. And so they decided that they wanted to take these runners and they would bring back American distance running. And so they would recruit runners that were in college because they wanted people that had viable careers afterwards. There's only like one runner in the world that's going to make $1 million and be able to live off of it. The rest of them need a profession.
Yeah.
And but they would know by college that they had a work ethic, they had this and whatever. And so they've been turning out Olympic athletes for years and years now. And I love them. You know, the brothers, they had a Runner's World magazine, you know, win a trip to New York to meet Keith and Kevin Hansen. I was like, shit, I can go visit them down the road.
Yeah.
And so anyways, one of their runners, her name was Desiree Davila. and just the sweetest girl. You know, they house the athletes, they pay their insurance, the whole bit, and they take them out and train. And so she ran the Boston Marathon, and she came in second by 30 seconds.
Holy
right?
fucking smokes.
Yeah, holy smokes, right? And so, you know, she trained with them, and she made it to some Olympic cycles. I think she went down to the Olympics in Brazil and whatever. But the next Boston Marathon she ran, she won it. So it's like, my book is like a sort of a tribute to those 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So where do you find that 30 seconds that's going to stand between you and greatness, right? And so like in any sport, you know, the wrestling or whatever, I'm like, all right, you guys are technically skilled. All of you know these techniques and whatever. So like if you can out muscle someone, if you have the same skill set and you're stronger, you know what I mean? So that's where's your 30 seconds.
I love that. I really dig that.
Yeah.
You've got to put that plan into action.
I know it. Yeah. Well, and part of the reason I wanted my pro card in the bodybuilding industry, you know, my dad and I talk about all the time is, you know, what qualifies somebody to be able to actually speak on a topic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, are you qualified? What are your qualifications? Because I see a lot of people, you know, that say that they're qualified and
wow. Yeah. You aren't kidding.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, so you may be able to go out and execute something and do it extremely well, but can you translate it and teach it? Or, you know, you're teaching it, but you're not modeling it or whatever. And so, you know, I've always been really careful.
You've learned about it, but have you done it?
Right. Yeah. And it's like, I would say between, you know, with what I've done in the weight room and triathlons that I'm qualified.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I'm passionate about it. So, you know, I think the best teachers in the world want their students to surpass them. Yeah. That is really, what else could you ask for in a teacher? Right.
Well, the best leaders make leaders. And that's just it. You would never hold somebody back. A true leader would never hold somebody back from.
Yeah. It's like, I want you to be better than me.
Absolutely. You know? I love that you said that.
Yeah.
I believe that too.
That's so cool. I think, well, you and I, you know, I think we see a lot of like, we have, you know, some really cool experiences and it doesn't come easy. I think, you know, some of the things that we got in place are school of hard knocks,
yeah.
You know, but it's like, I'm trying to remember who said it. There was, I think maybe it was maybe Bob Marley. He's like, when you get knocked down, are you going to get down? Are you going to get back up?
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just all like, yeah, you know, and it's like if you take some of those really trying situations, you know, because all of us experience it. It's part of the human condition.
Right? It is. And it's embracing it. And it's gritty and it's greasy and it's hard. And when we talked off camera, you and I got rolling for a few hours yesterday. And it was just amazing because I'm at a point in my life where I reflect back and I share those stories and I smile.
Yeah.
At those dark times and the adversity that I face, and you too, because we both shared that. Our whole conversation was ebbs and flows of smiles, you know, and fighting back tears at the same time. But it's almost like those they're like tears of triumph, you know, at this stage when you look back and you reflect, because we also talked, you're a very spiritual person. And I love that you were open enough to share your journey with spirituality with me, because it's kind of similar, you know, to mine. And when you go through those experiences and you don't know in the moment, when you flash back, when you reflect back, and you didn't know in the moment, but when you look back now, you see it was all laid out. Like it was supposed to be that way. You were supposed to experience that. Even though when you look back and you were thinking during those times, why am I experiencing this? It's because it was part of the plan.
Yeah, part of the plan. And you know, you get that mental toughness and fortitude.
Yeah, fortitude. That's my next t-shirt. I got to get that printed.
And I think I was showing you, too, I take these Voss bottles, the VOSS, they're glass because I don't like drinking out of plastic.
Yep.
But I scratch the V off. My sister and I both do. And this OSS is a jujitsu term. If you look it up, it literally means perseverance under pressure.
Yeah, I love
it. Yeah, I mean, like you really, I'm a big philosophy nerd. So when you really start, you know, sitting down thinking about wrapping your mind around something and what does that actually mean? And I did an Ironman in Ireland and they had literally the storm of the century. And man, a whole bunch of people dropped out, including my really good friend, Jackie. She and I have been training partners for a really long time. And her friends, you know, every time I would come through, it was four loops through the village. and it was torrential rain. I mean, like, it was just absolutely horrible. It was miserable. And they would come out and be like, Brandy, Brandy, you know, and run with me for like a little bit and then, you know, go back through. But that OSS kept going through my brain. It's just all like, you know, it's just like, got to get to the finish line. And you know, Jackie's husband, Thad, who I love dearly, it's like just some of the really good people. You'd love them. They actually, there was a hill on the bike climb that I think it was 18% grade hill. And the first loop of the bike was done. And when I came back to the hill, Thad was there and he said, Jackie's out. And I was like, oh, she's on her second loop. And he's like, no, she dropped out. And I, you know, at that point, she's such an accomplished racer. I was like, at that point, I'm like, okay, if I drop out of this race, no one's going to question if I do. Cause like, it sucks out here.
Right.
It fucking sucks so bad. And then I was like, nope, I'm all like, I'm going. And afterwards, Thad told me, he was like, yeah, he said, I saw something come over your face and I knew you weren't stopping. And I was like,
amazing. Yeah. You wrapped it.
Yeah, and I did. Yeah, and it was so brutal. Cool. I mean, I couldn't walk when we were done. There was like literally like, I didn't even feel it. Like,
you are your own limit, like you said.
Yeah. I had my race shoes that I always wore, never any problem. But because it's raining, you know, and the friction and everything. But about mile 25 of the run, so you got like maybe 12 minutes left of the race, somebody comes up behind me and she's like, there is a lot of blood coming out of your shoes.
Oh, shit.
Right? And then I felt it and I was all like, oh my God. And like literally crossed the finish line and had to like walk without shoes for like the next couple of days. But oh, I didn't feel it until somebody told me that I was having trouble.
You were in your badass warrior mode. Yeah.
And so that one was awesome. And I've had people from my club, and I actually, my friend Sandra Leonard, she had a transplant, you know, and she's still out there racing and being a badass. And some of my dearest friends, and she was like, Brandy, she's like, when I heard that weather, she's like, I knew you wouldn't quit, you know? And it's just like, you start realizing that, you know, people recognize that. And
people know you. Yeah, they know it. Yeah. They're inspired by you. I think that's great. I've been inspired since, you know, our good friend, our good connection, Dr. Greg Dudarian,
so
connected us, and he's going to come on and do a podcast too. And I'm so blessed that he connected us, because he knew that we'd be a good fit for sure. He was like, oh my God, when we were talking about doing the podcast, he and I talking about doing a podcast together, because he's got some great initiatives going on. So
He's had his article published on some work that he's doing with Lyme disease.
Yes.
Which is incredible.
This is where we're going to get to that eventually. He's, you know, we're going to talk about some of the weight loss stuff that he's got going on over at New Image, where he operates out of in Birmingham here in Michigan. And then the Lyme topic, Lyme disease, he's doing some amazing stuff right now. And yeah, when we got talking about that, he was like, you know what? He was like, I got to connect you with Brandy Ritter. He was like, she's a 5-time Ironman. And he like pulls up your picture and stuff. He was like, I'm going to reach out to her. He was like, you got to have her on your podcast. And I was like, yes. And then he connected us and we just instantly started chatting like we did in person, right, but via Instagram first.
Yeah, no, because so, I was up at like 4 o'clock for the gym, and you were all like, oh, I wasn't sure. That's why I sent it by Instagram. I didn't want to wake anybody up. I'm all like, yeah, I'm like, I'm not sure if I just love getting up at 4 for the gym or I'm getting like old people, you know? Right,
exactly. Well, because everyone that knows me, everyone makes fun of me because I wake up at 2, you know, because I want to get rolling. And then by the time my business day gets, the work day gets flowing, like I'm ready. You know what I mean? So, but I never know what anybody else's habits are, and I don't want to assume, you know, so I'm always thinking like Instagram's a safer route to go because maybe it doesn't, you know, ding the phone or whatever. So yeah, no, but it was such a pleasure just chatting right off the rip, and I would love
you just to have love that you. My sister and brother-in-law have great things.
Well, that too, because as soon as you told me that, I was like, I got to have you and your sister. Well, your sister separate episode, because she just got her black belt in jiu-jitsu and they're doing amazing things, and they're rescuing Great Danes, which is, you know, close to my heart.
Yeah, they're Great Dane Leonidas right now, literally junkyard dog, like abused so horribly bad. And like, I will tell anybody who listens that for Leonidas, it was either my sister and Pete or, you know, be put to sleep, because he basically just, you know, how abused he was. He has a lot of anger management issues. And but he was just trying to survive, you know, and I can't even believe sometimes that humans can be that cruel to a defenseless animal, you know?
I just rescued a dog. So I have some friends. A friend of mine is the founder of themagicmission.org, and they are currently, they've got a great initiative going, and I just adopted Burrito. He came from the island of Utila in Honduras, okay. And he flew in first class to Detroit on Valentine's Day of all days.
Nice little present.
Yeah. So he's one, and, you know, he's transitioning well, and it's just, it's so special to be a part of an initiative like that, you know, just like Leonidas, you said his name is. Yeah. Cool name too, by the way.
Yeah, I think, well, I think they know they call him Leonidas, and I think cool. He actually came with that name, but he's the third rescue that they've had. And you know, Great Danes being as big as they are, it's hard to home them. Fun seeing them. My sister calls them gentle giants.
Yes.
Know? And the Leonidas does have a little kerchief that, you know, and they live in Colorado, so bilingual, and says, mi perro es malo, you know, don't touch me, you know, no one's, but, you know, being around those dogs and stuff, it just sees, you know, how gentle they are and majestic, and it's been fun being a part of them too, because boy, they, you know, people want to see them and touch.
Yeah.
Them.
Very cool. They're experience. Very cool. And yeah. With these dogs. Yeah, no, they were not rescues, but, when I was looking to rescue, every dog that had come my way had such high medical expenses,
yeah.
Because it's a big responsibility to take on a Dane rescue.
Yep.
And I wanted to do it, but I wasn't financially in the position to do it.
Yep.
So I ended up with the two that I had, which I don't regret. And, you know, one just recently passed away, which ultimately led to me bringing Burrito home. Okay. So yeah, Burrito came with that name too. But I thought, like, I never thought I could take on a dog with a name already, but I could with Burrito. Yeah, I was like,
it just fit
because I love burritos.
That's awesome.
I was telling you the other day about my broccoli burritos.
Yeah. Oh yeah, those sound amazing too. I think I'm going to start trying those. Yeah. Actually, I'm stealing some of your stuff.
Yeah, so. And vice versa. So it was such a pleasure having you in the studio today. So amazing. I want to throw up your Instagram handle too for the audience if anyone wants to find their way into working with Brandy.
Yep. It's Brandy 4587. It's Brandy with a Y. Yeah. I always say business, not stripper, but it's Brandy. So Brandy 4587.
I love it. On Instagram.
On Instagram. Yes. But you know, back in the advent of everything, I sort of got lucky and smart. I made it pretty much. I have it for like Twitter, which is now X, and Facebook. And I mean, all of my social media accounts are all the same. So I sort of.
So you're on all of them.
Yeah, okay, I am. Perfect. But Instagram is my go-to.
Instagram's the go-to, but you do have a Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Yep,
cool.
I do.
Okay, gotcha. I'm off Facebook.
Yeah, I took myself off. I really started divorcing myself from some of those social media things. They were such a time suck.
Too many to handle and manage.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm looking forward already to having you back in the studio with your amazing sister. Yes.
Yes, my amazing. I love that girl so much. It's crazy. I love my family like crazy.
Absolutely. I love that about you.
Yeah.
And yeah, all right. Well, thank you so much, Brandy. All right, guys.
All right.
The beautiful Brandy Ritter, 5-time Ironman champion.
Yep. Muscles.
Yes. All right, guys. That's a wrap.
Thank you.